to Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Laramie.
Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Podcast Network. Mark Daly here, welcoming you to the show this week. And again, I'm all on my own. Kevin is back preparing for his wedding that takes place just around the corner, just a week or so down the road. But we'll keep the show going here. And when he gets back after all things wedding related, there will still be some Formula One to talk about because we are still, maybe not quite in the early days of the season. The season is well and truly underway, of course, and this weekend we are back to racing at the French Grand Prix at Circuit Paul Ricard, and really looking forward to that one. And as always, there is plenty of news to talk about in the Formula One world, and I think, we'll just pick it up where we left it off last week, and there's still been plenty of talk about Sebastian Vettel and the penalty that he got in Canada. And I just wanted to talk about a couple of things that I saw from right off the very top here that I thought were kind of interesting. And I was just looking through, going back some notes that I made, and just even going back to the Canadian Grand Prix almost 2 weeks ago. And there was this that I came across on ESPN.co.uk, just addressing Sebastian, talking about rumors that he's going to retire and leave Formula One at the end of the 2019 season. And I thought that was an interesting one because he seems very resigned to things, seems very accepting of the situation. And I don't know if I really buy into the notion that Sebastian's going to walk away from Formula One at the end of this year. I think he's too big of a fan of the sport. He loves Formula One. I think he loves being at Ferrari. And why would you want to walk away from that? I mean, they've really shown hints of competitiveness over the past couple of years. This year, of course, has been a little bit disappointing and challenging for them so far. But the thing is, I mean, who would they replace Sebastian Vettel with? I mean, Charles Leclerc is still settling in at Ferrari. I mean, he's had some fantastic moments already so far this year, but it's been a little bit far and few between. And I think that's what you would probably expect. I mean, I think that the more that this season goes on and the more races that Charles gets under his belt in Ferrari, I mean, we have to remember that the guy's only in his second year in Formula One, and I mean, he came from Sauber, now he's racing for the big boys right up at the very top, and I mean, there's no doubt, I think, that he'll figure it out. But if Sebastian was to walk away from Ferrari, walk away from Formula One at the end of 2019, who would come back and fill that role for them? And that's a really great question. I mean, 2021 is when the driver's market is really going to open up again. So I think that Ferrari themselves, I mean, they would probably be looking at that window anyways. I mean, I think that's just a natural thing in any kind of sports. And I always remember hearing, I can't remember, I think it was Wally Buono, who was the general manager of the BC Lions football club here in Vancouver. And he said, it's my job to find someone that's better than you. He was talking about one of his players. So, and that's very true. I mean, when you are at a top level sport, you're always looking to improve your team, or in this case, your driver's lineup. I mean, Sebastian, obviously one of the best drivers in Formula One. I mean, he's a four-time world champion. So that would be a big fill, but for him to walk away right now would really, I think, leave Ferrari a little bit hanging, don't you think? But I was wondering, and I'm going to go with this, so just give me a little bit of latitude here. What about Fernando Alonso? Fernando, of course, just won Le Mans again just this past weekend, second time in a row, won the overall championship in endurance cars. What's left for him to do? And he's not going to pursue a full-time drive in IndyCar in 2020. But of course, you have to think that now that he's won Monaco twice, he's won Le Mans twice, so he's got two times the first two legs of the unofficial triple crown of motorsport under his belt. So of course, Indy is the only one that's left. But even though he walked away from Formula One, excuse me, at the end of 2018, am I the only one that feels like Fernando walked away and left something on the table? And I mean, there's a lot that I think that Fernando has to own himself, because there is no doubt that had things turned out differently, he would not be just a double world champion, as if that's something to turn your nose up at and frown upon. I mean, that's still a wonderful achievement. But way back in 2005, 2006, when he won those world championships, when still a fairly young driver, when he was at Renault, didn't we all get the feeling that that was just the start for Fernando Alonso, that he was destined to be, or really looked like he was going to be one of the all-time greats in Formula One? And then fast forward a dozen or so years, he's leaving the sport with his tail between his legs to a certain extent, because the whole McLaren experiment, if you want to call it that, was a disappointment. I mean, the guy is undoubtedly a very, very talented driver, even in his late 30s. I mean, he's still fast, he's still competitive, but he'd kind of really worked himself into that situation. We all know how it worked out with McLaren the first time, way back when he was teammates with Lewis Hamilton. We know how it worked out at Ferrari, and how he broke that contract and then went over to McLaren. Just the unmitigated disaster it was, going back to the Woking based team with their latest partnership with the Honda engines, which was just absolutely disastrous. But here we go now, a year or two later down the road, and Fernando's kind of keeping his options open. I mean, you would have to think that he would love another shot at Formula One, and you would think that he would love to get back into a really competitive team. I don't really know what the situation or what the arrangement that he has with McLaren, but you would have to think, if you're Fernando and you have the opportunity to go into Ferrari, where they are at the moment, if that's even possible, considering the way that that he left the team a couple of years ago. But let's just say for a moment that it is, and then let's just say that Sebastian's playing his cards close to his chest, and he does decide to walk away and retire from Formula One at the end of 2019. Wouldn't Fernando Alonso just be one of those guys that you would probably reach out to? I mean, there isn't really too much of a risk. I mean, if you're just going to bring him in on a one-year sort of deal and just see where it goes. I mean, on Fernando's side, you have to think that Ferrari's a little bit better off than when he left them several years ago now at the end of 2014. But the Ferrari has steadily been going forward. Last year, of course, they had a legitimate shot to win the world championship, both in the constructors and the drivers championship. Obviously, it turned out to be another for Mercedes, but definitely up until at least halfway, maybe even two-thirds of the way through the season, I would have to say that it was a championship that got away from them. I think that they were legitimate contenders, and if they can get the car, well, maybe not this year. 2019 is well and truly underway, but let's just say next year they're able to get back to the level where they were, say, in the second half of 2017, in 2018. They're closer to Mercedes. They find a way how to keep the temperature and the tires. We all know that they have the best, most powerful engine in Formula One. You'd have to think, if you're Fernando, if that opportunity comes up, you're just gonna jump at it. But who knows? That like I say, is a bit of speculation, mostly on my part. But I thought it was interesting, the quote that Vettel said, and I'll just read it here verbatim. Quote: "I never said anything like that, so I don't know where it has come from. I think I can stop whenever I want, and the team can probably kick me out whenever they want, but I am very happy with the team, and I hope the team is happy with myself." And well, that is the $64,000 question. Obviously, I think that Sebastian has to realize that he is in a good situation at Ferrari, even though it's been frustrating. I think we all expected them to be more competitive this year, be a lot closer to Mercedes, and they've regressed a little bit. They've slipped a couple of years back in the I wouldn't say not terms of technology, but we're back to like a situation in Formula One where it's basically a question: who's going to win the world championship? Is it not going to be a Mercedes or Ferrari or a Red Bull driver? But basically, the way it's looking at right now for 2019 is going to be which Mercedes driver is going to win the world championship. So when I say that the situation has slipped a little bit, it's more of a return to like the Hamilton Rosberg era of Mercedes and Formula One. It was basically those two winning every other weekend, and it was going to be down to one of those guys winning the world championship at the end of the year. And so, like I say, from that point of view, it's disappointing from Ferrari. If they could only find a way how to get the temperature into the tires on the car, and we've seen hints of it. I mean, the car has been good at times, just not good enough often enough, and that has been the big problem. I mean, it looked like they were all set for a 1-2 at Bahrain, and obviously it didn't turn out that way. And I thought that Sebastian Vettel looked really good in Canada a couple of weeks ago, and it was just a crying shame the way that whole incident played out, and he ended up getting that 5-second time penalty added to his race time, which of course dropped him from first to second, and that was just a real shame. We're going to talk a little bit more about that in the moment, because there's still fallout coming from that, and of course I would be remiss if I didn't talk about that a little bit, so we will go there. But who knows, let's just say if Vettel decides to retire at the end of the year, and certainly I hope he doesn't, I'd like to see him finish out his contract at Ferrari for this year, next year, and hopefully he sticks around in Formula One for a little bit longer than that. Honestly, I like Sebastian Vettel, and I did enjoy the scrap that he was having with Lewis in Montreal. And my big beef is not so much that Sebastian Vettel was given the 5-second time penalty. It's just the whole circumstances around it. And I would really like to see the way that Formula One is structured is to let these guys race a little bit more, because that's what they're saying a couple of years ago, was that when it comes to these decisions with the stewards, that they're going to be a little bit more lenient and maybe let these things, and quote, a racing incident or whatever you want to call it, slide by and maybe go unpunished, or maybe not punished as often as maybe we'd seen in the past. And that's where I think the real shame is that I think that it was a really good scrap. I mean, it was really down to those two guys. I mean, Lewis hadn't really made an attempt to try and get to Sebastian Vettel, but I mean, they were really I think about 10 or 12 seconds ahead of Charles Leclerc in third place. And it was obvious that whatever happened, it was going to be either Vettel or Hamilton that was going to win that race. And I think that I speak not only for myself, but also probably many for you, that saying that I don't really mind if Hamilton wins that race. I don't really mind if Vettel wins that race in Canada. I just like to see it happen for something that happened on the track, a clean overtake, or say, oh, even if Vettel makes that mistake and Hamilton passes him cleanly, I'm okay with that. It's just the way that he's handed the penalty, and then he crosses the line first, and then Hamilton wins by virtue of that that time penalty being applied, I think really robbed the fans of something. And that will be coming up for more discussion, because Ferrari has decided to, well, they dropped their appeal after the end of the race, and what they've done instead is that they've asked for a review, which they can do, because it's just, again, the way that the rules and everything that are structured, that they've instead gone to the FIA to review the decision to punish Vettel for what they called like an unsafe return to the tracks. And it's basically, I mean, it's more of a it's just the way the rules are structured. It's kind of like 6 of 1, half dozen of the other. But there is a way that that if they believe that they have new, what they call new and relevant material, they can bring that forward and request it as part of the review process. So we'll wait and see whether or not that punishment gets overturned, or whether or not it stands, and then we just keep the classification as it was in Canada, with Sebastian Vettel in second, Lewis Hamilton first, and Charles Leclerc in third position. So watch this space. We'll definitely have to see how this one shakes up. And apparently the FIA will probably convene the stewards at some point in the race weekend at the French Grand Prix. And well, first of all, I guess the big decision that they'll come to is whether or not the new evidence that Ferrari is bringing forward, is it going to be relevant? Is it going to be something that's admissible? Is it going to be something that they think is even worthwhile reviewing? And well, we'll wait and see. But apparently they do have new data. They've got GPS data and telemetry, and just Vettel's own personal testimony, which is something that they believe should have been held, or should have been taken into account closer to the time, or back at the Canadian Grand Prix, rather than just unilaterally handing out the decision before the race was over. And obviously the controversy is still raging on and on. Anyways, I'm just going to take a quick break here for a word from our sponsors. Don't go away. We'll be back in just one moment. passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. All right, welcome back to the podcast. It's always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Podcast Network. And as I was just talking about before we went into the break, the appeal has been dropped for Sebastian Vettel by Ferrari, but the review, they are going to go ahead with it, like I was saying. And I was just reading over some of my notes here, and that's what they're going to do. They're going to pull out some GPS evidence, Vettel's testimony on the whole fact there, and we'll wait and see whether they think there's something to it. Of course, I think the big problem is not so much that it was Vettel looked like he was about to lose the rear of the car when he was going into that little chicane, that little corner turn four at Circuit Gilles Villeneuve, but he was about to lose it, went over the grass. It's not how he re-entered, but there was a second little wiggle, and I think that's where the stewards really focused on. So it'll be interesting to see how Ferrari try and spin that, and whether or not they are successful in getting that review through to the stewards, and whether or not it'll actually hold any water, and see if they can get that overturned. Anyways, moving along here, there's still plenty of things to talk about. Although I guess there isn't, because looking at my notes, the next item I have is entitled Formula One Can't Move On From Vettel, a Penalty. And that comes from the mouth of Cyril Abiteboul, who is the team principal of Renault. And it's really, of course, it's really sparked a big debate. And Abiteboul says that they can't forget the controversy surrounding the whole incident of Sebastian Vettel and Lewis Hamilton at the Canadian Grand Prix. If they decide and accept that the rules of Formula One must indeed change, and of course this is one of the big topics at the moment. The Concorde Agreement, of course, ends at the end of 2020, and this has been an ongoing saga. We're no closer now to finding out what the post 2020 Formula One rules, what the landscape is going to look like. It seems every once in a while that it looks like that something's going to happen. Right now it seems it's going to be pushed back, that we might have some sort of announcement in October. We'll talk a little bit more about that a little bit later on in the show, but I think that Abiteboul makes some good points, and he thinks that Formula One has a habit of moving on from controversies without discussing the potential for improving the rules, and he thinks that it might be a good idea to address that, especially when it comes to driving standards, especially at the moment. If it was maybe something with that went on between, I don't know, for example, Antonio Giovinazzi and Lance Stroll, or Sergio Perez, you know, somebody that's in the middle of the pack fighting it out, that's not really going to get much coverage. I mean, we might see it during the race, and we see the replays, and we'll see the announcement that one of the others been given a 5-second time penalty for unsafe re-entry to the track, and we all made, oh well, yeah, I can see, well, that's fine. And we may not really think about the deeper implications of such an incident, but when it comes to two of the biggest names on the grid fighting it out for a race win, I think that like Abiteboul says, this is a good time to discuss about it. And like I was saying earlier in the show before the break, I would just like to see a Formula One where drivers are able to fight and able to push, and and try and really fight it out and try and make those maneuvers and try and make those passing attempts, especially when it comes to a race lead. I am not by any means advocating reckless or dangerous behavior. There's plenty of guys that we can use as examples, both current and former Formula One drivers. But the point is that I think when it comes to a couple of guys like Lewis Hamilton and Sebastian Vettel, that when they're scrapping it out, you got to think that common sense is going to prevail. Of course, there's going to be those heat of the moment times, like we saw a couple of years ago in Baku when Sebastian lost it behind the safety car and decided to go and try and push Lewis off of the track when he thought that he'd been brake tested and was really upset about that. That's completely a different situation. I think that when it comes down to a straight fight on the track, I think both of those guys are good enough. I think they're smart enough. I think they're respectable enough that they will know when, you know, where the line is. And I don't think that either of them is a particularly dirty driver. I think that they're going to use every single advantage and every bit of inch of track that they can use to defend a position if they are under attack from a car behind them. But that's the thing that we want to watch. We want to see drivers scrapping it out. I mean, how exciting is it to watch a guy carving through his way through the field or make a wonderful pass to take the lead and win the race? And we know that there are guys out there in Formula One that can do that. I mean, Max Verstappen is a guy that we've seen make some incredible passes in some very unorthodox places around circuits over the years. And I think that should be encouraged in Formula One. And I would like to see a situation where they are able to move forward from this, and rather the mindset be, you know, I can make a pass here because I think I can get this guy and I can take the lead of the race, rather than, well, if I pass this guy and it doesn't come off, am I going to get harshly penalized for it or whatever the case may be? I think that when it comes to the point where the rule book is maybe a little bit too far in the forefront of the thought process, I think that takes something away from the sport. I think that it should always come down to the fight that's on the track. And like I say, as long as it's a safe overtake, I think that's basically what it comes down to. And as long as, you know, you're not trading too much paint, to use that phrase, or really muscling your way through, or you're exceeding the track limits, or somehow unfairly gaining that position, you know, just let the guys fight and take it from there. And I think that's the way that that Formula One should really try and approach that moving forward. But just sticking a little bit now with Ferrari and also Ducati from MotoGP, and it's interesting, but apparently they may drop the Mission Win Now logos for the rest of the season, and that's something that they've had. I guess the correct way for their title sponsor and partner Philip Morris, the tobacco company. Obviously, you can't go and advertise cigarettes or tobacco products anymore. I mean, in years gone by, I mean, there was always cigarette and tobacco advertising in Formula One and Marlboro, which is a Philip Morris brand that was on Ferrari for a while. I mean, way back in the 80s, they sponsored McLaren, Benson and Hedges, Camels. A lot of these cigarette brands were in Formula One. Obviously, not a good idea to advertise that in this day and age, but it has caused a little bit of controversy this year. They actually had to drop that logo at the season opener, Ferrari did, and there are similar regulations in Canada and France, and Ducati had to do the same thing for the Moto GP race recently at Le Mans. So maybe they'll just drop it for the rest of the year. You know, honestly, I accept that sponsorship is a part of Formula One. I mean, you can't go into a sport like that without having corporate support, because, I mean, it's big, 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 big money, just to be trying to overstate that a little bit. And it's just, I guess it's unfortunate, but I mean, way back in the day, I mean, cigarettes were just a normal thing and people just smoked. Obviously, over time, it's become well known just how dangerous and how bad they are for your health. So obviously, promoting them is not the best thing, and making it look glamorous is not a good look for Formula One or anywhere else. So you can understand that, but it would be nice. And I know this is sort of I guess wishful thinking or romantic notion on my behalf, but if you go back and look at the cars from like the pre early 1970s or late 1960s, whenever it was that that sponsorship first came in. I mean, the cars just look beautiful. I mean, the dark British racing green for cars like Lotus, or just the scarlet red of the Ferraris, or just the silver of the Mercedes, or any other team that was in Formula One. They just looked nicer. They just looked sleeker. They looked cleaner. I mean, you just saw the line of the car. And I mean, nowadays, I mean, it's in all forms of motorsport, of course, and it's not just Formula One, but the cars, certainly, I think, in from my point of view, at any rate, I think they look a lot nicer without it. But who knows? I mean, if they keep it, whatever. It's just another one of those things. But let's talk now a little bit about the French Grand Prix. And Ferrari said that they will have what they call small evolutions in place for the French Grand Prix. And it is what it is, right? I mean, the big thing is, even though that the Ferrari does reportedly have the most powerful engine in Formula One, Lewis Hamilton was talking about it as well, saying that they have a power mode available that Mercedes just doesn't have. The car and the high downforce approach that they have to the SF90 for this year just isn't working the way that they planned out, and it's just too difficult to get the tires up to that proper temperature range that where the tires really work, and that's the thing. And the season is really it's well and truly, I think, beyond Ferrari at the moment. It would be too much to expect that the machine that that Mercedes is, that they would all of a sudden fall victim, if you will, to all this rotten, terrible bad luck that would really knock them off the top of the, well, especially Constructors Championship. I mean, if you look at the constructors at the moment, Mercedes is miles ahead. They have 295 points in the constructors at the moment. That's over 100 points ahead of Ferrari, who are in second with 172. So, I mean, the constructors is, I wouldn't say a foregone conclusion, but it basically is. I mean, unless something completely unexpected and drastic happens to Mercedes this year, it's going to be another Constructors' Championship for them. And then you look at the Drivers' Championship. I mean, it's a little bit closer, obviously. I mean, you have Lewis and Hamilton on top with 162 points, Bottas behind with 133 points, and Vettel still sort of kind of has a shout in the World Championship. I mean, he's currently third with 100 points. And I mean, it would take a lot to catch even Valtteri Bottas. I mean, he's 33 points behind. But hey, I mean, if Bottas doesn't finish in France this weekend, and Vettel wins that one, then all of a sudden he's only maybe 8 points behind him in the World Championship. So it could happen. I mean, Lewis Hamilton, 62 points ahead of Sebastian Vettel in third place in the World Championship at the moment. That's a big stretch. I mean, even if you go back to 2016, the year that Nico Rosberg won his one and only world championship, that was a year that Lewis had a bit of a rough start to the season after about four or five races. I think it was Rosberg had something in the order. I think it was like a 42 or a 43 point lead. And it really seemed at that point that I wouldn't say that four or five races into the year is going to be a foregone conclusion, but certainly things looked very favorable for Nico Rosberg at that point. And that year, I mean, Lewis did slowly but surely claw his way back into the title fight. And by the time we got into the last several races down the stretch there, Lewis was really fighting for it and was coming close. The big difference then was when his engine blew, when the big end let go in Malaysia. Australia. And that really was the moment, I think, that that Hamilton's championship really took a real big hit. I know that basically from that point, the last four or five races, Rosberg was basically just managing it and just really going the conservative route, just getting the points that he needed without really having to go out there. He knew that Lewis would have to go out and win every race, but if he just finished second and just got the points that he needed, then he would be okay. And of course, it came down to a pretty exciting finale in Abu Dhabi, but 43 points is one thing after a couple of races to really fight back. And of course, that was between two guys in a Mercedes. It seems that, you know, closing and then closing a 62-point gap and then getting in front of a guy in a Mercedes by a guy in a Ferrari seems, well, let's just call it like it is. It's unrealistic at this point in time, but who knows? Certainly, I think that it would be, it would make the season, I think, a little bit more interesting if Ferrari was able to get more competitive, live up to some of the expectations, maybe live up to some of the hype that they had in winter testing, and were able to challenge for some race victories, hopefully starting this weekend. I mean, like I say, a couple of weeks ago in Canada, they looked really, really good. But again, when you go back and look at the first seven races of the year, it's all Bottas, Hamilton, Hamilton, Bottas, Hamilton, Hamilton, Hamilton. So it would certainly be nice to see a different name in there at some point. Anyways, time again for another real big quick break here on the program. Don't go away. When we come back on the other side, we're going to keep going talking about McLaren. We're going to talk a little bit more about the 2021 rules. And we're going to talk about Gunther Steiner getting annoyed and all sorts of things. So anyways, don't go away. We'll be right back after this very short break to hear a word from our sponsors.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, well, welcome back to the show. And as we get back into it, we start looking towards the French Grand Prix again this weekend. Just some follow-up from the Canadian Grand Prix, and McLaren has revealed the cause of that really weird incident Lando Norris had at the Canadian Grand Prix a couple of weeks ago. And if for those of you that saw the race, you'll remember that Lando came down the pit straight with a fire and his right rear tire kind of hanging at a very strange angle. And when I saw that, I thought, and I think I'm sure a lot of people did, that that Lando just got it wrong going through that chicane at the end of the very long straightaway at the back of the circuit there, coming into the start finish, and it tagged the wall of champions. Anyways, when he did stop on the side of the track, there was a big fire. So anyways, McLaren has revealed is that there was a fire that was started, and it was all kicked off by overheating brakes, and that basically led to a chain reaction that started a fire, and it has led to a collapse of the suspension at the rear of the car. And basically, when the brakes overheated at the back of the car like that, it was in an area that doesn't get much airflow. So obviously, when it was a hot day in Montreal, it's a circuit that's tough on brakes anyways, and it just was almost a perfect storm. And it was like I say, it was a weird one. And I really thought it was a little bit ironic in a way that, even though I think a lot of us thought that he tagged the wall of champions, and it's been a while since we've actually seen a car fall victim to the Wall of Champions. And actually, without going back and really looking into it, I can't even remember off the top of my head who was one of the last notable drivers, at any rate, to be forced out of out of the Canadian Grand Prix. But anyways, that's what it is. Moving ahead now to the next item of news. Honda is going to introduce an upgraded engine for the French Grand Prix. So three cars will be getting that. There'll be the two Red Bulls of Max Verstappen and Pierre Gasly. Danny Kvyat at Toro Rosso is going to get the latest spec as well, but he's going to have to incur a five grid place penalty because of that. So, well, that is what it is. Anyhow, that's just... I guess part of the business, but maybe Kvyat won't mind it so much if he gets the latest engine in his car. And it's Honda's first upgrade of the season. Their first upgrade of the season came several weeks ago at Azerbaijan, and that was centered on reliability. And this latest upgrade centers more around the combustion engine and the turbocharger. So it'll be interesting to see what effect this new upgraded Honda engine has in the cars for the Red Bulls and the Toro Rosso's. And I think that that Red Bull, at least, I think, has to be quite happy with the way the season has turned out so far. I think that if you look at the results that they have and where the car is in terms of performance, I would say that it's about the same, maybe marginally ahead of where they were this time last year with the Renault in the back of the car. And I know maybe that doesn't sound like a really big praise to say, well, they're exactly the same where they were last year. But I think any time that that you switch engine manufacturers like they did, and it was a big risk for them. But you know, having said that, with all the problems that that Honda had when they were with McLaren, I think it's a very, very promising start for them. And that was Honda's goal right from the very beginning, was to keep Red Bull in the position that they were with in the past couple of years with Renault. I mean, I know they want to be winning more races. They want to be challenging for world championships and things like that. And obviously, Red Bull and Christian Horner and Max Verstappen and any drivers for Red Bull would feel the same way. But certainly, I think that to be on a level par where this year from compared to where you came from, I think is a very, very good start. So I know that they've said that they hope to be targeting wins by the middle of this season, and that seems like a pretty lofty ambition, but who knows? I mean, they certainly, I think, have... They've got a good partnership going, and I think one of the big differences is that they really tried to design a car that really accommodated the Honda engine, that there was a real synergy and symmetry to the design, rather than McLaren designed a car and Honda designed an engine and it didn't necessarily go together, it didn't really mesh or pair well, whatever you want to call it. That's may have been more of a hindrance and led to contributed to some of the issues. Obviously, there were a lot of power issues and reliability issues just on the Honda side, but certainly Honda and Red Bull seem to have a bit of a tighter, more interactive and thoughtful working relationship between the two of them. So certainly watching where it goes this year and whether or not they can challenge for race victories. I mean, being competitive on one of these tracks, say like Monaco, is one thing. And I mean, it was exciting to see Max trying to pass Lewis when he was struggling with those blistering tires in the front. And I mean, it was good fun to watch. I mean, it would have been fun to see Max get by Lewis and even get the 5 seconds or so or more in front of him to try and erase the 5 second time penalty he had. But that was for that unsafe release after the pit stops when he pushed Valtteri Bottas into the Armco barrier. But anyways, I mean, that's one situation. I think that if they are to be competitive on a proper purpose-built racetrack compared to, say, a temporary road circuit like Monaco, that is the big test for them. I mean, if they can beat Ferrari and Mercedes straight up on a racetrack, I think that would be the real test. And I think certainly that they've got a good case to make that they're fighting Ferrari consistently, and they've actually been better than them and faster than them. them quite a number of occasions so far this year, whether or not they can close that gap to Mercedes, especially during the middle of the season, and be fighting for them or fighting with them more regularly this year. I don't know. It, to me, seems, what do you want to call it, an ambitious goal on behalf of Red Bull and Honda. But who knows? Maybe they can pull it off. Certainly, I think maybe what might be a more realistic or a tempered expectation would be not so much to be challenging and fighting for race wins with Mercedes each and every weekend. But who knows? Maybe they might be able to steal one here and there. I mean, you go back and look last year at the end of the year, just how good Red Bull and Renault were in the thin air in Mexico City. I mean, they were just a class apart. So who knows? Maybe there might be a similar situation that that favors the Honda engine this year, and I think that might be the situation that we see going into 2020 when they've already had a year under their belts working together. Who knows? I think that at that point, that certainly once they get more time working together, and Honda continues to work on this project, continues to work on their engines, and as they get better, and as they understand the technology better, and as they're able to build faster, more powerful, more reliable engines, who knows? It could be a completely different situation in 2020, and it could be that that we see Red Bull and Mercedes and Ferrari all scrapping it out, or maybe Red Bull become the new Mercedes, or maybe they become the new Ferrari. There's so many different things, but the point is that that at this point in time, the partnership between Red Bull and Honda certainly looks good, and we really look forward to see where it goes from here. Now, this is an interesting story that I saw. And this one comes from motorsport.com, and this is a France Toss team principal from Toro Rosso, and he says that he believes that modern Formula One drivers are too fit to make mistakes. And well, there's another story that's a follow-up to this one. I was Romain Grosjean was saying that compared to karting, that he doesn't really feel tired or physically challenged. I'm kind of parsing and paraphrasing here when racing in Formula One, and when they switched to the new regs last year for 2017 with the more aggressive, faster cars, Lewis Hamilton said that drivers need to face a bigger physical challenge. And I mean, I kind of remember vaguely back growing up in the 80s a couple of times when, you know, you get a driver come out of the car absolutely exhausted. I seem to remember something with Nelson Piquet and Nigel Mansell, but, you know, that's going way back and I don't remember the specifics. But the thing is, and it's not just Formula One, but I think you look at almost any sport now, like the science that goes into it. I mean, I think you can take soccer or football or basketball or hockey or whatever. You can take any sport. I mean, the amount of physical training, nutrition, and just all the different things that these athletes are putting into just their own fitness nowadays. And certainly the bar was set in Formula One by Michael Schumacher. I mean, he really approached it in a different way. And I mean, I don't think even at the point before that guys were grossly out of shape. I mean, certainly far from it. But the thing is, Schumacher approached it in a very clinical and a very scientific way, and really knew that by becoming supremely fit and just being really methodical and precise around his whole diet, nutrition, and his training and everything like that would give him an edge over other guys. And certainly that was a huge thing. And a lot of drivers have mirrored that and followed that down the years. And I think that's a really good point that Tost is making, because if the cars were to become more physically demanding to drive, it might be a little bit more physically demanding for the drivers, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be getting out of the cockpit completely exhausted and crawl their way up the stairs to the podium at the end of the race. I mean, I think it would be a good thing to make it a little bit more physically demanding rather than just flying around there for an hour and a half or 2 hours and with a less physical side to it. I think anything that you can do to make the sports more challenging is a good thing, because remember, these are supposed to be the 20 of the best racing drivers in the entire world. So whatever situation that you're putting them into, in the cars, in the races, it shouldn't be easy. Let's just put it that way. Whatever those circumstances may be, that regardless if you finish first or last in a Formula One race, you had to really, really work for it. And I've often had this discussion, with my brother and some friends that, well, what if they were to go backwards almost and switch from the semi-automatic paddle shift on the back of the steering wheels and all the fancy controls that they have to do? They can change all the settings in the car, and they have to shift with an old-fashioned clutch and a gear shift. Obviously, that's maybe being a little bit too extreme, and especially in this day and age, the technology is part of Formula One. The technology is part of what makes Formula One cool. I mean, when I can drive around, in my car with the paddle shift on the back of the steering wheel, it's fun. there's no other way to say it. It's cool. It's enjoyable. And to think that that some of the trickle down technology like that, and the ABS and the traction control that I have in my car, is something that was developed in Formula One is pretty cool. And I mean, that's not the only reason that they should have it, the road relevant technology and things like that, but certainly the technology is there, and that's part of Formula One. But where's the trade-off? Like, when does the technology, or especially that term driver's aids, when does it become too much, and when does it take too much away from the drivers? I mean, you could make the argument that sure, it may not be as physically demanding, but the driver has a lot more to do in the car. And when they passed those radio rules a couple of years ago, where the pits aren't supposed to give them as much advice and guidance and tutelage over the radio on what they need to do if they have a problem in the car, yeah, sure, let the driver figure that out. So I guess it's easier in some respects and more difficult in others. So perhaps this is a situation where it's maybe more of, what kind of perspective are you looking at the conversation from? Are you looking at more from a point of view that, well, they've got too many gizmos and gadgets that make it easier for them? Or are you looking at it from the point of view that, okay, well, the cars are too easy to drive because of the technology, and let's bring it back, to an earlier era and take a lot of these driver's aids away? So I think a lot of it is personal. So again, it really depends whether you think that the driver aids are a good thing or a bad thing, but whatever happens, technology is here to stay in Formula One. Anyways, time for one final break, and then we're going to start closing down the show for this week. And like I hinted earlier, Gunther Steiner, one of the stars of Formula One, the Drive to Survive series on Netflix, is annoyed. And I'll tell you more after this short break here on the Overtime Podcast Network. Don't go away. All right, welcome back. And as I said, Haas team principal Gunther Steiner says he cannot get more, quote-unquote, annoyed about his team's misfortunes so far this year. And despite having what's been a pretty good and competitive and quick car, often the fourth fastest car on the track, they have been befallen of a lot of unfortunate incidents, and most recently K-Mag, Kevin Magnussen, crashed heavily in Montreal qualifying and then struggled throughout the entire race, finished in 17th. Romain Grosjean dropped back after getting tangled up with Alex Albon's dislodged front wing on the opening lap, and ended up 14th, and Steiner was lamenting, and I quote, "We cannot catch a break. It was one of those disastrous weekends. It started in Q2 and it didn't finish. The only thing we can do is regroup and try and do better next time around." And isn't it one of those cases that, and just to maybe oversimplify it a bit, whether I guess you could say, when you're hot, you're hot, and when you're not, you're not. But when it comes to Haas and they look good. They look like they were competitive in Australia, but it seems that they're almost stuck in a time loop. It seems they had the same problem again with the tires and the pit stop in Australia, and they've just had these little problems here and there all year long. And Steiner is just really frustrated that they just can't kind of break out of it and move forward from there. And it must be very, very frustrating for them. I mean, they're currently eighth in the world championship, and you would think that they've been in Formula One long enough now. I know they came in as basically a brand new team, and that's not an easy thing in Formula One. But the thing is that even when they came in, and we'll put that whole discussion of being a Ferrari B team to the side for now, but certainly they've kind of always kind of shown hints that they might be able to do something. I mean, winning races might be a bit of a stretch, but they always always give hints like they might be one of those teams that might be classified as the best of the rest. And more often than not, it seems that for one reason or another, it just doesn't work out for them. But Steiner, for me, just talking about the F1 Drive to Survive on Netflix. And if you do have Netflix and you haven't watched it, seriously, stop what you're doing right now. It's 10 episodes, I believe. Go and sit down and watch them. And believe me, if you watch one, you're going to watch them all basically straight through and binge watch it. That's basically what I did the weekend that it came out. I think I watched all 10 episodes over the course of about a day and a half. Every spare moment I had, I sat down watching it. So it was really, really good. And Steiner was one of the stars of that. And just I liked his bluntness. I liked the way that that he came across, and I have to say I'm a bit of a fan. Maybe not a complete all out fanboy, but I do have a bit more respect now and admiration for Günther Steiner than maybe before. All right, talking about McLaren now, and they believe that 2020, so next year, will be when they really prove that their new structure that they've had in place and the new key players that have been brought into the team over the past couple of years, like James Key as the technical director and the new team principal, Andreas Seidel. They believe that by 2020, all these key people that they brought in over the past couple of years will have been able to imprint and really make their impression felt upon the team. And they really feel that that they're going to be making a big step forward for next season. And I think that there might be something to that, to be quite honest. This year, they might not be up there challenging for race wins, but they are currently fourth in the world championship, just a couple of points ahead of Renault. And I think that's exactly where they need to be. Still a lot of racing to go, but I think that Lando Norris and Carlos Sainz have done a pretty good job so far this year. They're scoring points. The car seems to be competitive. It also seems to be reliable. Okay, well, maybe not reliable for Lando Norris in Canada a couple of weeks ago, but slowly but surely, they're making positive forward movement. And compared to where they were a couple of years ago, I think that is extremely encouraging for McLaren, because they have been to hell, and maybe not quite all the way back, but they certainly are going in the right direction. They have a long way to go before they can become legitimate title contenders in Formula One, race or contenders to win races, and even to get on the podium. But I think that we are slowly but surely seeing that the changes that they've made, the people that that Zak Brown has brought into McLaren, are starting to make their impression felt and their presence known in the team. And it's going to be exciting to watch. Honestly, I'm not a huge McLaren fan. I never really say divulge where my loyalties lie, but certainly I have an enormous amount of respect for them. And it's been sad to see them struggle over the past several years, just as much as it's been tough and disappointing to watch Williams struggle the way they were. I mean, when I was growing up, I was always a Williams fan because I fell in love with the way that Nigel Mansell raced. And then after that, it was Damon Hill and then Jacques Villeneuve being Canadian. Obviously, I was a big fan of Jacques, and Jacques winning the world championship in the late 90s was a wonderful, wonderful moment. And then it's always been a team that I've had a soft spot for. And it's been difficult to watch them and also McLaren struggle, but compared to Williams, at least at this point, McLaren seem to slowly but surely they're getting the ship turned around, and we're seeing some positive gains being made. So would like to see them continue that, but certainly there's going to be a lot of work to do, and I think they'll get it right. I hope they get it right. But honestly, I think it'll be a couple more years at least before all these changes really manifest and they kind of go through the process a little bit more. And as these these new key players like Seidel, like Key, they really get the chance to work together and really come up, I think, with a common vision and really move the team forward. And anyways, talking about other teams that need to move forward, Nico Hülkenberg at Renault believes that that their 2019 quote pretty much or works pretty much everywhere, but the progress that they've made has been hidden by some of the problems and the troubles that they have. I mean, they were fourth last year in the Constructors' Championship. But so far this year, and that that double DNF that they had at Bahrain a couple of races into the year when Hülkenberg and Ricciardo basically expired at exactly the same moment towards the end of that race was, I think, kind of underlines the problems that they've had in the first half dozen or so races of the year. And I still find them a bit of a conundrum. I find them a bit of a hard team to figure out. Honestly, I thought that once they came back into Formula One a couple of years ago, once they rescued and bought out Lotus, I thought that 4 or 5 years into it, because I mean they. It was their fifth year now. I've almost lost track. Anyways, I would have thought by this point that they would be a little bit further up. I mean, they've kind of been close to the best of the rest for the past year or two. But this year, that progress seems to have stalled a little bit. And I think certainly that is disappointing for Daniel Ricciardo. But I mean, that was the risk that he took. That really was the risk that he took when he decided rather unexpectedly to not re-sign with Red Bull, but go to Renault for this year and for the next couple of years, that it was going to be a gamble. And based on the first 7 races of the season, you could make that argument that gamble has not worked out for him. But again, that's the risk. And, you know, to be fair, I mean, half a dozen, 7 races really is a pretty small sample. I mean, I think we can only really come back towards the end of the year or after the end of this year and really look at it then and say, well, how was the year one of Ricciardo's Renault experiment? Was it good? Was it bad? Did it start slow but turned around in the summer and he finished on a strong note? Those chapters are still to be written, so we're going to have to leave this book open and just revisit it in the months down the road and at the end of the season. But it's been difficult, but it is interesting to hear from Hülkenberg himself that the car is good. I mean, the engine seems to be good. I mean, McLaren seemed to be having some success with it, so... In theory, you would expect that the works team is going to have all the bells and whistles and maybe have some things that a customer team like McLaren may not. I mean, in theory, they're supposed to have identical equipment. I mean, being a customer and works team. But you just have to think that the preference and everything is going to be the preferential treatment is always going to go to the works team rather than the customer, rather than, the other way around. What the reality is, that's a good question, but I'd like to see Renault do a little bit more. I'd like to see them perform a bit better than they have. And they've been talking about the proposed budget cap for 2021 at $175 million is going to be a situation where they're going to have to spend more And the teams and the FIA have agreed to a $175 million spending cap, but there are certain exclusions like travel and driver salaries that are going to come into force for 2021. And it's a level that's a lot higher that some of the smaller teams had hoped for. And Renault actually said that they have to evaluate whether or not it will have to ramp up its budget to have a chance to close down on the top three teams. So it's interesting because Cyril Abiteboul has said when it comes to the $175 million, it says we are well below in no shape or form. Is it a saving opportunity for us? So that's a bit of a surprise that they may actually have to invest more money and spend more money just to sort of be there. And I mean, I don't think you should just go out and spend any kind of money that that you want or feel that you should be obliged to. And I've always looked at the Force India model, that, you know, the teams that have done more with less. And I mean, certainly I think that there is room for ingenuity in Formula One, and I respect that. And I think that that's an important kind of thing. So I don't think that just because, you know, you're supposed to spend more money that you should. But certainly I think the revelation, the surprise for me was that Renault admitting that that they would have to spend more money, because I know that they had their budgeting increased for this year, and I thought actually they were spending more money than it turns out that they actually are. I'm not exactly sure what the budget is right now, but I do specifically recall prepping for a show earlier this year that they did say that their budget had been increased for 2019, but to see when they're throwing numbers out for this spending cap that they're well below it, that was a bit of an eye-opener for me. All right, well, we're starting to get right down to the crunch time here, so talking a little bit now about the 2021 regulations, and McLaren team principal Andreas Seidel says that the FIA must stick to the principles of the 2021 regulations, even if a delay in the publication allows times for changes. There are rules that were said are supposed to be ratified by the World Motorsport Council this month, but the FIA and Formula One have asked the teams to approve a delay until October, and that's still coming. For me, like I was saying earlier in the show, I think that basically there's a lot that needs to be done. On the one side, like we were talking about earlier, there's a sporting part of it where the rules, I think, have to favor racing, allow more latitude for the drivers. Like I was saying, if the drivers are worrying more whether or not a move he's going to make is going to result in a penalty, I think that maybe it's gone too far in one direction. But also, excuse me, I think that the regulations and how they design the cars and what a Formula One car actually looks like for 2021 and beyond is equally important. I know we were all really excited a year or two ago, a year and a half, whatever it was, when Formula One, when they had that, I don't know what you want to call it, a launch, press conference, whatever, but Ross Brawn had basically put out a concept of what a 2021 Formula One car might look like. It was very sleek, very aggressive looking, and I know it got a lot of us really excited that's what Formula One will look like. So it's going to be a real balancing act to see how they pull that off. And, I hope they kind of go in that direction. But there's so many vested interests and so many politics in Formula One, you really never know what you're going to get. Also, another kind of interesting story that I saw this week is that Michael Schumacher's Ferrari F2002 is going to be auctioned off at the end of the year in Abu Dhabi, and that is chassis number 219 that he won 3 of the 11 Grand Prix in his very dominant 2002 season that year. He won at the San Marino Grand Prix at Imola, and then he won again in Austria. And for those of you who remember that race, and I remember it very well, that's the one where Rubens Barrichello was ordered to pull over and let Schumacher win that race literally meters from the start-finish line on the very last lap, which was very controversial. And it was a very, very memorable. So it's going to be auctioned off by Sotheby's. And one of the descriptions that they have out there, they call it, quote, truly special. It represents one of the last Rory Byrne-designed V10 era cars. It was like a guided missile acquiring wins en route to a championship won with sheer racing dominance. And also included in that auction is a signed Ferrari F40. And that is signed and autographed none other than Sebastian Vettel. And I was kind of thinking, the Ferrari F40 is one of my favorite Ferraris. And I thought, what do I need to do to have the money to be able to get a lovely toy like that? But obviously, I think that's always going to be a bit of a pipe dream for me. But dreaming's not necessarily a bad thing. Anyhow, let's just take a quick look at some stats here for the French Grand Prix that will be take place at Paul Ricard this weekend. It is a 53-lap race. The circuit length is just over 5.8 kilometers. It is a race distance of just under 310 kilometers. The lap record was set last year by Valtteri Bottas and the Mercedes. That was a 134.225. And last year, of course, will be remembered of the coming together of Valtteri Bottas and Sebastian Vettel in the opening corners. And of course, that was a little bit controversial. So the last three winners for the French Grand Prix was Lewis Hamilton, Felipe Massa, and Kimi Raikkonen. And of course, you have to maybe look at that with a bit of an asterisk, if you want to call it that, because last year was the first French Grand Prix that we had since 2008. So Massa back in 2008 was driving for Ferrari, and Kimi Raikkonen won previously in 2007. Then that was also in a Ferrari, and certainly look forward to it this week. So last year, the starting grid for the first, we'll go over the first couple of rows, was Mercedes front row lockout, Lewis Hamilton on pole, Valtteri Bottas in second. Lining up on row two was Sebastian Vettel and Max Verstappen. Row three saw Danny Ricciardo and Kimi Raikkonen in the second Ferrari. So not really all that different. And the way that this one shook out at the end, because Sebastian Vettel and Valtteri Bottas had the damage sustained in that opening lap incident, the race was won by Lewis Hamilton, followed by Max Verstappen, who finished 7 seconds adrift, and Kimi Raikkonen rounded out the podium. Danny Ricciardo finished in fourth. Vettel clawed his way all the way back up to fifth place. Kevin Magnussen was sixth, and Valtteri Bottas finished in seventh position. And then also just a real quick reminder of the World Championship. We'll just run down the first several places as it stands at the moment. And as I mentioned a little bit earlier, it is still Lewis Hamilton on top, 162 points. Valtteri Bottas in second. Sebastian Vettel third with 100 points. Max Verstappen in fourth. Charles Leclerc in fifth. Pierre Gasly in sixth. And then we have Carlos Sainz in the first of the McLarens, followed by Danny Ricciardo, Kevin Magnussen, and Sergio Perez rounding out the top 10. Anyways, guys, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you so very much for downloading and listening to the show this week. Hope you all enjoy the French Grand Prix this weekend. We'll try and come back with the show. If not, we'll be back this time next week. Life has just been crazy the past couple of months or so, and it's been difficult to sit down and just do even a weekly show. Would love to do some stuff on the race weekend. So anyways, we'll leave it open. If I manage to come back and talk Formula One over the weekend, that'll be a bonus. If not, like I say, enjoy the race. And we'll talk to you again at any rate very, very soon. Have a great week, guys. I'm out of here. Talk to you all soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 podcast. If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to ScuderiaF1Pod.com. Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com.